Kind of fast, kind of not. Either way, always running or talking about it. Welcome to the Kind of Fast podcast, powered by Upward Running. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Kind of Fast podcast, a show where we talk running, real life, and everything in between.
It is episode 10. It's the first time we've hit double digits. It's definitely a special episode for us.
That's right. We are 10 episodes in, and we thought this one deserved a little bit of celebrating. So we've packed it full. We're going to talk about 10 lessons that running has taught me to celebrate our 10th episode. We're also going to talk about running news, obviously. You'll never hear me complain about that one. A deep dive into The Wall, which Travis hit on last episode. A brand new game called Marathon Myth or Fact, and some listener feedback that is just too good to share.
But before we get too far into it, for a couple weeks now, we've been talking about a giveaway that we were going to do. It was going to include some Tailwind, which is an electrolyte mix that I like to use. And Courtney DeWalter has a special mix that they sell. It's called a DeWalter Melon. And so we're going to give away a pack of that and a t-shirt. So should we do that now?
I think we should. Let's do it.
All right. I got the names here. We do appreciate everyone who has liked and subscribed and told a friend about it and commented. And that's how you got your name into the jar here for the winner here. So Tailwind and a t-shirt. Who's going to get it, Claire?
Okay, here we go. I got to mix them up a little bit. Let's pull one out. Joshua. Now, Joshua is an Upward Running member, which is really cool. He's actually on the advanced plan, and he commented on YouTube. I remember seeing his comment just now.
That's great. Love that.
Great job, Joshua. We are excited. I will get with you to get your t-shirt and your Tailwind. Okay, moving on. Cue the drum roll. It is time again for our favorite segment. What does that even mean? As I was saying, last week, Travis was talking about The Wall, and he explained it super, super quickly. And I'm paraphrasing here. He said that your body can't hold enough energy to make it through a full marathon. So unless you're putting the nutrition back in, you're going to run out of that quick burning fuel right around mile 20.
Yep, that was the 10-second definition, but let's dive a little bit deeper here so we can give everyone kind of a look into what The Wall is, if you haven't heard of that before, or if you need to know what that even means.
Yeah, so what exactly is The Wall? And you also might hear it referred to as bonking. Now, everything can be going fine. You've trained, you've practiced your fueling, you've got your pacing strategy, but then suddenly it all unravels. Your legs feel like they weigh a million pounds each. Your energy tanks, and mentally it feels like the finish line is a million miles away. And honestly, it might be. Most runners hit this between miles 18 and 22, but Travis, dive deeper into this for us.
Sure. So during exercise, your body prefers to burn carbs, or the more technical term is glycogen. That comes from your muscles and your liver, and that's where all of those energy stores are held. It can also burn fat. Now, fat is a slower burning energy source. And so your body can't convert that into energy nearly as fast as it can the glycogen. And that's when you hit the wall, it is because your body is working so hard to convert fat into the energy you need as you're continuing to try to progress on in your athletic endeavor there. And so most people can get 1,800 to 2,000 calories worth of glycogen storage that they have on their body if they're all the way topped off at any given time. And since most runners burn about 100 calories per mile, you can see the math how we get to 18 to 20 miles there, unless you're fueling, you know, from a zero place where you really are at a depleted state already. That's what you can really expect to get there. So before we get too far into it, 100 calories per mile is definitely an approximation. There are a few things that can influence 100 calories per mile. Do you want to take any guesses?
Sleep? Does sleep have anything to do with it?
Not on the list. One more try.
Oh, man. I mean, how fast you go.
Okay. Pace is one of them. So running faster will burn more calories than running slower. So that's just a general term there, but certainly you will deplete more energy more quickly the faster you are going. Here's three other ones that influence that calories per mile. Your weight. So a heavier runner will burn more calories because it just takes more energy to move you through space than a lighter runner. The terrain will influence the calorie burn. So if you're running uphill, that burns more calories than if you're running flat or downhill. And if you're on tricky terrain, say a trail or something like that, where you're having to really use your brain to make sure you're stepping correctly and avoiding things and not turning an ankle and all that type of thing, that will lead to burning more calories as well. And then finally, gender. Gender plays a role. Men burn more calories more quickly than women do. So I went to the trusty Google AI. I talked about it last week. I went back to it and it said 150-pound person running at about 10 minutes per mile would burn about 100 calories per mile. So right on the approximate. Okay. But a 200-pound person running 7-minute miles would burn about 150 calories per mile. That's exactly me. I am nearly exactly 200 pounds, and I hope to be running my marathon at nearly exactly 7 minutes per. So this is great information for me as I kind of think about my nutrition 8 weeks out from my marathon at this time and try to figure out how much carbs I need to be taking in during the race to make sure I don't hit the wall.
You know, in addition to the handy dandy Google AI, we also wanted to ask one of our very own experts, our national run coach, Dean Thompson. He said that anything over about 1 hour and 45 minutes, you need to be taking in carbs. And he says that this was an easy to remember strategy. Take something on the starting line and then every 30 minutes after.
Yep. And we've seen sports dietitians that will recommend, you know, make sure you're starting within the first 30 minutes, then consistently take 30 to 60 grams of carbs per hour. For reference, Morton is a gel that I took in my last marathon cycle and on marathon day. That's got 25 grams per kind of pack or gel pack there. And so if you're taking that twice an hour, that's 50 grams of carbs per hour right there just from two gels. So real easy to remember. SIS gels is what I've been taking this cycle, and those have 22 per serving. So, you know, you well over the 40 mark at that point in time per hour.
Okay, so what about our listeners who are running a half marathon or a 10K? Do they need to use the same fueling strategy, you think?
It's really about how long you're going to be out there. That hour and 45 minutes that Dean mentioned in his explanation is a good one there. So if your half marathon is going to take longer than that, then you should have some type of strategy to make sure you're getting some carbs. You don't need to overdo it because you only need it for the amount of time that you're going to kind of be out there beyond an hour and 45 minutes on that. But for me, a marathon's the only time that in a race setting that I would be taking, you know, in some type of extra fueling. And honestly, on a normal Saturday long run, my number is about 15 miles. If I'm 15 miles or under, I don't take anything with me. 15 miles or over, I know that, you know, within an hour or something of starting that, I need to be taking something so I can finish strong on that run. That's kind of my go-to strategy there. Everyone's going to be a little bit different. And your pace and how long you're going to be on your feet, all of that matters as relates to this and just your experience. I mean, if you've ever hit the wall, you don't want it to happen again. I've hit it certainly in the past. And so you just kind of, once you do it long enough, you can kind of get a feel for what sends you to that level where you really are running out of that energy source.
For a little bit of comparison, I only take fuel with me if I'm running anything over 10 miles. So that's kind of my threshold.
So do you have a story?
I don't think I've ever actually hit the wall. I mean, in a race. I have hit the wall in a training long run and just kind of flat out sat on the side of the road and waited for someone to pick me up.
Yeah.
But not in an actual race. And I think adrenaline has something to do with that. Now, I have been on the edge of, why did I sign up for this? I'm never doing this again. This is the worst thing I've ever done, but I still push through.
I'd say the New York City Marathon that I ran in 2018, there was evidence that I had hit the wall, or I just pushed it all the way to the edge and I just had nothing left. I know I slowed down my last few miles, which would be maybe evidence of hitting the wall or maybe just being donezo on the end of it. But the main piece of evidence for me was I could basically not carry on a conversation until I got some fluids and food in me. My wife and friends that were there were like, yeah, this isn't right. And my friends took off and my wife, you know, made sure that I got something to eat and took me back to the hotel for a little bit. And after an hour or so, I was fine. But I was pretty much mentally out of it for a while after that one. So probably hit the wall there. There's some other probably training runs when I was younger where it might have happened just from being a dumb college student that wasn't eating enough or something like that. But it's rare. It's rare for me. All right, so moving right along, it's time for our running news segment.
Yes, the best segment. After 45 years, the Foot Locker Cross Country Championships are officially ending, not happening anymore. And that has so many runners just completely devastated. For those of you who don't know, this is the high school national championship meet that started in 1979 and is now no longer happening.
It's just been canceled for good. It's done. Like, press release out there. See ya. Sorry. And that's tough. This is a race that originally was branded as the Kenny Cross Country Championships. It was renamed to Foot Locker in 1993. And outside of 2020, it's been run every year since. It was a thing when I was in high school as well. And so it's been a long-standing race.
Yes, this is actually the gold standard event. So there were four regional qualifiers you would have to do to get into this event. So there was the Northeast, Midwest, South, and West, and the top 10 boys and girls from each of those regions would advance to the national championships that was held in San Diego.
Yep, all of the U.S. running royalty basically has run these races over the years. The first thing I always think about is the story of Ryan and Sarah Hall, two professional runners out there. Sarah still competing in her 40s at the highest level. I think she just announced she's running New York City. I saw last week that she's going to be doing that this year. But Ryan Hall, who's the fastest American ever to run the marathon on the men's side, they met at Foot Locker Championships and then went on to go to Stanford together and get married eventually. So been together ever since. But Sarah won in the year 2000. Ryan was third that same year. That's the first story I think about when I think about Foot Locker and the people who ran it.
So many elite athletes have won or placed in this race. And it's really sad that it's just not happening anymore. I mean, this was the national high school cross country meet. But in recent years, other events like the Nike Cross Nationals, also known as the NXN and Running Lane Championships, they rose really high in popularity. So that might be why this happened. There's so many other options for runners to choose. I don't know.
Yeah. So Foot Locker's official statement said that the decision to end the series reflects our ongoing commitment to evaluating where we can make the most meaningful impact, including in the running community.
Well, this is definitely the end of an era. So Balboa Park in San Diego will always be iconic for cross country fans. I mean, it's not replaceable. I remember watching clips of this throughout the years, and now it's no longer there. So it's going down in history.
So who knows what comes next, if NXN or Running Lane will fill the void, if someone else will come together and maybe even bring those two races into the fold with them and just have one national championship. That would be nice to see there. So we'll see where it goes.
So here's our question for the community, guys. Did you ever race Foot Locker National, or were you more of an NXN or Running Lane crew? Share your information with us.
Did you ever run any of these?
I was not fast, Travis. I was not fast. Absolutely not. But I did watch them on the internet.
I did run it once.
No way.
I mean, not nationals. I ran the Southeast version of it or whatever. If you remember my story back from the very beginning, I was very late to running in high school. And so my junior year, I was a full-time football player and a part-time cross-country runner. And I did run at Foot Locker that year. 1747 is what I saw. I went and looked it up today, what I ran. So not all that impressive there on that day. My senior year, I was hurt. I tore my hip flexor before the race, so I didn't get to do it that time. But yeah, I'm a Foot Locker alum to a degree.
That's exciting. I learned something new about you today.
All right. So what's next on the news side?
Yeah. So now that we're done talking about high school cross country, I wanted to introduce another ultra marathoner to everybody. Since we've been giving Courtney DeWalter all the fame, let's talk about someone else who just hit a crazy milestone. That is Tara Dower. She just shattered the overall fastest known time on Vermont's Long Trail. And fun fact, I've got some stats here for you. That's 273 miles, more than 66,000 feet of climbing, and she covered it in 3 days, 18 hours, and 29 minutes. You guys, that's faster than literally anyone, male or female, has ever done it. And she beat the record by guess how long?
4 hours.
2 hours.
Okay.
2 hours.
That's pretty impressive, and I love that you keep bringing these ultra marathoners up, since I hated on ultra marathoners a few episodes back. But I'm learning things through this as well, and I love that you're picking up on these types of races. So from what I can tell, she basically ran from the Canadian border all the way down Vermont to Massachusetts in less than 4 days. That was kind of the racetrack there.
And here's the thing. She barely slept. I think maybe 3 hours total in that amount of time, which is absolutely insane. She had a few quick naps. Now, these quick naps are 2-3 minutes each, like max. They are the definition of a quick nap. So we talked about hallucinations in our ultra marathon episode. And guess what? It happened to her. She saw a 15-foot baby clown. Terrifying.
Okay.
A sofa and a melting person in the woods. I mean, that sounds like a legitimate nightmare.
I think she had passed the wall at that point. Wouldn't you think?
100%. 100%.
So when you've run out of all of your glycogen and fat stores, you start, you know, running off of hallucinations, I believe. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you had me at the 15-foot clown. I mean, true nightmare. As if running over 200 miles is not already a nightmare. Yeah.
She's tough for sure. So last year, same runner, she ran the entire Appalachian Trail, which is 2,189 miles in 40 days. And that beat the men's record by 13 hours. She's also raced ultras like Western States, Hard Rock, and Lake Sonoma. So she is a powerhouse in the ultra world.
Yes, the definition of powerhouse. And what I love is how she framed it afterwards. She says, "I want this to say less about me and more about women. I think women can hold overall FKTs, which is a fastest known time, especially on these 200 plus mile trails. We don't even know what we're truly capable of yet, but we're figuring it out." So to recap, 273 miles, 4 days, hallucinations. She ate burritos. That's how she fueled. She saw baby clowns. Also, 15-foot baby clown. That seems like a big baby clown. And a record that might stand for a long time. So Tara Dower is an absolute beast.
Yep. And she's eyeing the Mammoth 200 in California next month and another race in Arizona in October. So she is getting after it.
Okay, but now let's bring the news closer to home. We've had a few more people join Upward Running from the Kinda Fast podcast, which is super exciting. So I've got to shout out Kelly. Shout out to Kelly for jumping in.
Thanks, Kelly. We appreciate you using the code and letting us know that you heard about us on Kinda Fast.
Yep, and we also need to spotlight Todd. And I actually talked to Todd this past weekend. So let me tell you about Todd a little bit. He is awesome. He is in the Run Club app on a maintenance plan. And you know why he's on a maintenance plan?
I do not know.
Well, I'm going to tell everybody. He is actually training for, and I'm probably going to mess this up, a duathlon.
Duathlon.
Duathlon. Dang it. I even practiced this. He is training for a duathlon on October 11th, and that is a 2-mile run, a 21.3-mile bike and then another 3-mile run. And he's also thinking about signing up for the Big Beach Half Marathon in January that Upward Running members are running into.
I've done one duathlon, and it is you have a tricky kind of transition from bike shoes to, well, I guess you run it from running shoes to bike shoes and back to running shoes in two different segments there. It can be a grueling little race there for sure.
Yeah, and here is the best part. So Todd also works for H&R Block, and he's studying for a super big IRS test on October 2nd to become an enrolled agent. And so he's already passed 2 of the 3 tests, and he told me that training for this has been the perfect stress reliever of all the studying.
Yep, great example of why we run, right? You know, we talked about it last week, you know, find your why and kind of lean into that. And so it's not just about the races. It's about having something healthy to balance the rest of your life.
Yeah. So Todd, we are cheering for you. 2 different dates, October 2nd and October 11th. You've got the whole community behind you. And really, that's what this podcast is all about. Community, encouragement. Let's just rally together and cheer each other on.
Yep. Go get it, Todd. We're looking forward to hearing about that race report.
Okay, we told you guys this is episode 10, and now is the time. I'm going to share 10 lessons that running has taught me. We're going to kick it off with number 1, consistency beats intensity. So in running, it's not about one monster workout. Anyone can go out and run hard, I mean, one time. The runners and athletes who see growth are the ones who keep showing up even on the boring, long, and hard days.
Yeah, I think the runner out there that runs, you know, 30 miles a week, every week for 52 weeks would be far better than the runner that runs 50 miles for 2 straight months and then takes a month off and then has, you know, 3 weeks of another 60 miles and then takes, you know, 6 weeks off and then, you know, is doing heavier miles and harder workouts when they're out there doing it, but they're not consistent with it. You know, your runner that's going to stack those weeks one on top of another, on top of another. And so you got months and quarters and years that you can continue to build that aerobic development. That person's going to be far better off in the end. And I think that's a very good thing to kind of learn early on as far as top things for running.
Totally agree. Thank you for your insight there. All right, our second lesson, and I will preach this until I am blue in the face. Fuel matters more than you think. You hear us talk about it all of the time on this podcast. So every runner thinks about the wall that we just talked about. If you don't fuel right, you're not going to finish strong and you're not going to reach your full potential.
Yeah, and this is a place where I've been trying to grow myself on fueling, which is just eat more healthy. Eat more, make sure I'm paying attention to macros. I don't get into, like, you know, really tracking that thing at the minutia level or anything like that. But I am in this marathon cycle, knowing how often I've been injured in the past. That's the one place that I'm kind of twisting the knob a little bit to see if I can be better. And that's by fueling better after my runs, before my runs, during the week, those types of things, trying to cut out as much processed foods as I can this cycle. And so far, so good on that. So, you know, that's a place where for me, I'm trying to make big gains in my running and in life.
That's fantastic. So, and spiritually, the same is true. So what you put into your mind and your heart matters. If you're filling yourself with negativity, if you're fueling on all processed foods, comparison and junk, that's what's going to come out. So you truly have a garbage in, garbage out mentality, both in running and in your spiritual walk.
Yeah, great point there. And if you think about, like, our Upward Running group, you are going to be around a collection of other runners who are like-minded and can be encouraging. You're going to get weekly devotions from our team that are a lot of times about running. And so if you're thinking about running, you're taking in a podcast like this one or the other Upward Running podcast, you're, you know, diving into the word here and there, all that's good inputs and probably going to have good outputs as a result.
Agree. Okay, guys, lesson number 3, start lines are scarier than finish lines. So think about it. Lining up before a race is completely nerve-wracking. At least it is for me. So you're questioning yourself, did I train enough? Am I ready? What if I fail? What if I don't hit my 1 hour and 50 minute PR coming up in October? I mean, that's terrifying to even think about, but start lines are scarier than finish lines.
For sure. Although, you know, a finish line is a final thing, you know, like once you cross that finish line, the result is there. And so there is some pressure that goes along with that too. But I totally agree with this one. The anxiety of a race that's upcoming, especially if you have a big goal or it's something you've never done before, that's something that I embrace personally. I know that's not the norm though. Like that's what I like to feel, that feeling, that anxiety on the start line, and kind of think about all the work I've already done that's made me prepared for this day and this performance. So, you know, as an example, I'm running a race two nights from today, and I'm considering trying to go and run a 10K and going out at my 5K pace that I had just 2 weeks ago, trying to run the first 5K at that same pace with still a 5K to go. So that's scary, and it may lead for a painful last 5K of a race, but it's also exciting to see what you can do, because you never know until you get to the day and you kind of see where those chips may fall.
That's true. You don't know until you try. And in faith, it's the same. Taking the first step into something new, and that could be joining a community group at your church, joining a small group at your church, joining a church in general, making a change. Sometimes that's the hardest part. But once you start, God meets you in that movement and continues to carry you through.
Great point there. And love that you tie that back to like a church or whatever. It can be very hard to walk through the doors that first time. But what I think you'll find if you're not someone that attends a church regularly is there is a whole host of people there that are there to welcome you and can be your next big community or friendships or things like that, can help you grow along the way if you do take that step.
Okay, number four, community makes the hard miles easier. Yes. I mean, period. Next point.
Right. For sure. You know, long runs feel shorter with company. And when you're out there for an hour or two, the miles just go along quickly with that conversation that you have out there, and can be a fun thing to do it with others, for sure.
Mitchell, the director of running here at Upward Running, actually says it perfect. He says that people like to suffer together. And my friend Margot is the epitome of that. She is always down for any run. I can text her, hey, I've got 19 miles in the morning. Here's the kicker. I need to go at 3:30 in the morning. She said, sure, see you there. Where are we going? And she meets me there every single time. She doesn't say no.
Was that a recent thing?
This was training for the Chicago Marathon.
3:30 in the morning. That is dedication and friendship.
Yep.
I don't think I'd have returned that text, but that's what you'll find with runners and walkers out there, that you want to do this with others. You want to be supportive of others. That's great for her to do that for you.
Yep. Find a community. And I would 1000% do that for her. She's training for the Myrtle Beach Marathon in March, is it?
February, March.
Yeah. So, yep. She hasn't asked me to do that with her yet. Knock on the wood there.
she may need it reciprocated at some point.
She may. Okay, lesson number five, comparison steals joy. On Strava, on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever social media is out there, even on the race course, it's so easy to measure yourself against someone else. But your 5K isn't supposed to be your 5K. That's supposed to be my 5K. So if I'm comparing myself as a runner to you, no shot. I will always fall short. So comparison steals joy. It is your race.
Yeah. And I don't think it's something that I struggle with, but I know a lot of people do. And it really can even blind your own progress. You could be setting a huge personal best, but if you're scrolling through and you're seeing someone that's running faster, suddenly that doesn't feel like quite enough. And man, that's just not where you want to be. You want to be in a place where you can celebrate the wins or the achievements or the next big step for you personally or the people around you, and be happy for them and whatever success they've had as well. And so, yeah, if that's a problem for you, maybe you need to hop off of Strava and not see those things so that you can appreciate the things that you're able to accomplish yourself.
I actually had a friend, Jake, do that. And he got off of all social media on Strava, Instagram, everything, because he was falling into that comparison trap. And now he is blowing it out of the water. He has PR'd in two different distances. And I'm not going to say it's only because he's off of social media, but I think that comparison trap is a real, thief of joy. But
for sure.
Okay, number six, setbacks are not the end. Injuries, bad races, missed goals, yes, they hurt, but they're not the final chapter. And I think Travis can speak into this a lot.
For sure, I can. I've had many setbacks. With injuries and things like that. I mean, my last two marathons that I've trained for heavily, I got hurt around this time of training leading into it. So one with a stress fracture, one with a really bad Achilles. And so I remember someone asked me, you know, why do you keep coming back if this keeps happening to you? And it's like, I don't know any other way at this point. Like, just got to keep striving to meet the goal that I have out there. And so it is important for me to continue to go after this. I want my daughter to see that. And really, it's not even just about anything like that. It's just, I'm at a time in my life where I want to still achieve things athletically. And so it's important to still go after it.
Yeah. And faith really mirrors that too. I mean, we mess up as Christians, we mess up daily. We fall short daily, but God isn't finished with us yet. He uses our setbacks as setups for growth and redemption. And we can truly parallel that with running. So you are about to unlock your growth and get your redemption race. I feel it. And I am telling you it's going to happen.
I'm due, I think.
Yep.
It's my turn, I think.
Agree. Lesson seven, joy is found in the journey. Some of my favorite runs have absolutely nothing to do with pace or distance. And I know Travis is probably the complete opposite of me in this because he loves going after his pace and he loves going after distance. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think that I might be more on your side than you think.
Really?
Maybe.
Okay, sure.
I mean, I just think every run has a purpose. And there's some runs where the purpose is to run fast and run far. But there are more runs where it's just about getting the mileage in nice and easy and experiencing whatever is around me. Like, why would I drive 45 minutes to the edge of the mountains to go run on a gravel road with a picturesque mountain view if it wasn't also about those things for me too?
You know, you have a point. Look at you over there.
It's fun to do those things sometimes too.
So what brings you joy in running?
I think it's a sense of accomplishment when you have, if you set out to do something and you've gone and done it. It's a check the box situation a lot of times where I have a plan. I'm seeing that plan through. But I think just getting out and moving and being active and still having a body that works and can do, amazing things as it relates to still getting out there and moving. I think that brings me joy.
Mic drop over there.
What about you?
What brings me joy in a run? I mean, honestly, it probably boils back down to accomplishment as well, but in a different sense, like, oh, my body can still go and run 3 miles without even blinking an eye. I mean, I never want to be in a situation where someone asks, hey, let's go run XYZ, and I have to say no. I think that's what brings me joy, is that my body is able to move, and that's truly something I never want to take for granted.
Great. Yep.
All right, number eight, we're close to our 10 here, but number eight is discipline builds freedom. And running discipline means you train even when you don't feel like it. And that discipline gives you freedom on race day and every other day. You're doing hard things. You are setting yourself up for success and pushing through even when the going gets tough.
Yeah, when you put in the work, like I talked about, when I go to the starting line, I think about like all the work that I have accomplished, all the hard runs that I've done, even the ones that didn't go well, I did those things. When you do that, you can toe the line with confidence. You're not second guessing and wondering if you did enough or panicking about the distance ahead. You know, the discipline of sticking to those plan, logging the miles, doing the workouts, getting enough sleep, eating the right things, you know, all that pays off in the form of freedom there on race day.
Yeah, it's true. And it's truly the difference between showing up to a race and dreading running a race or knowing that you put in the work. And I have been in both of these situations. And let me tell you, I would rather be prepared than dread the race. And I've probably done that on two or three occasions in a half marathon at Run Disney. But
I've got in trouble more often than dreading a race. I've got in trouble too many times by going, ooh, this could be that magical day. This could be that. Because I've had a couple of those where you just have this like big jump in performance that even you couldn't have imagined that you would have done that well. It's happened to me a couple times. And so anyway, I seek that now. And sometimes I'm not in shape well enough to really go after such and such race or time. That might even happen this week for me, but we'll see.
Lesson number 9, your why carries you farther than you know. Travis talked about his why and the importance of having a why last week. So I had to include this here. So when running gets painful, the logistics of training won't keep you moving. Your why you started, why you're doing this is truly what's going to take you to the finish line.
And in life, if you know your why, you can endure a lot more things than you thought was possible. So that's something that'll work with running, but it can also work in other places of your life as well.
1,000%. Okay, finally, number 10, celebrate the milestones. Every finish line, every PR, every comeback matters. Too often, we just move on to the next goal and we forget to celebrate. And I am totally guilty of this. I just did this last October at the Chicago Marathon. I ran the marathon, trained hard for this marathon, didn't skip a run unless I had a super high fever, ran the marathon, PR'd by over an hour. And you know what I did when I finished?
I know what you do. You jumped on a plane and came straight back the same day, which is crazy.
Yep. So we hobbled. Me and my friend Margo, actually, we hobbled to the hotel room very slowly. I downed a Coke and I never drink soda. Like very rarely do I drink soda. So I was hyped up on this soda, just ran a marathon, hobbled down to the airport, got on the airplane and came home. We didn't even eat a good dinner. We ate a quesadilla at the airport.
And was back at work the next morning.
I wore my medal, though.
Yeah, no, this is something I have no problem with. I celebrate wins. I celebrate big races. And that's something me and my wife have made a point to do. We celebrate if either one of us get a raise or a job change or any other significant things. I just think that's important to do to kind of note those. And I don't know if that's rooted in my running history or not. It's just something we've always done. So I told you at the time when you ran Chicago, you just started here at Upward, you should stay the night and celebrate that win of running a marathon. And let's just not pass over an hour PR.
Who
runs an hour PR? You know what? That's an amazing finish there.
Well, thank you. Hopefully I can shave that off by another 30 minutes, maybe, but you didn't hear that. I didn't say that. Let's move on. I do not want to claim that yet. Let me finish my half marathon first.
That makes sense. Yep.
So there you have it, guys. 10 lessons from running that has shaped my faith in my life. Thank you for listening to all those and giving your input on those.
Very, very, very good 10 lessons there. 10 things that any runner could take a few takeaways. So appreciate you sharing those things.
Yeah. All right. Before we move on, let's lighten it up a little bit. In honor of our Couch to Marathon program kicking off on September 29th, we're going to play a game called Marathon Myth or Fact. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. What we're going to do is I'm going to ask a question and Travis has a guess if it's a myth or a fact. So
let's see if you can stump me.
It'll go better than Mad Gab, I think.
Okay.
Okay, number one, the marathon has always been 26.2 miles.
Total myth, although it's pretty close. the original Greek runner that ran about 26 miles. But I don't know all the iterations of it. I do know when they had the Olympics in London, which was 1900-something, they extended it a little bit so that the Queen could see the finish line there. And so I think that's how we got to 26.2. Am I right?
That is exactly right. So basically, we have to suffer a little bit longer because the Queen wanted to have a better view. So shout out to the Queen for that. Okay, number two. The average marathon finish time worldwide is over 4 hours.
Mm. I'm going to say that is true.
That is true. Okay. Great job. So the actual time is around 4 hours and 20 minutes is average. So if you're anywhere near that, then you are right. I mean, you're right there. You're average.
Are you over or under the average?
I think my PR was 4:30, so I'm below average, which that's not surprising.
Yeah, but you already took an hour off, so who knows how much you're going to take off the next one.
I know, because maybe I should race one. My goals for the last two I did was to finish and mission accomplished. So
there you go.
Again, future episode, future episode.
Hey, you are very relatable because you are very much like a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, in many, many different ways. And so, you know, so far your races have been good races and you should not discount them.
Okay. I will try very hard. It's that comparison that we just talked about happening.
Don't let comparison be the thief. Yes.
Okay. Number three, carb loading means eating a giant bowl of pasta the night before your race.
Yeah. I know this one for sure. That is a part of it maybe, but it's a myth. You want to carbo load several days before. There's all kind of things you can read on this. And so some people would say it's like 3 days. Some people would say it's more like 5 or 6 days you should be carb loading. You know, I've had a coach who said, don't even worry about carbo loading because it makes, so it's, you know, we just got talking about the wall. You can only extend that amount of glycogen so far. And so if you feel bloated on the race start line because you've been eating nothing but bread and rice nonstop, just stuffing your throat with it for 6 straight days, then maybe that is more of a detriment than the actual carbs that moves your glycogen stores up just a little bit. So anyway, that is a long answer to the myth or fact. I don't even know what you're going to say. What would you say to that?
I was going to say it's a myth.
Okay.
So you're spot on.
I'm glad I was right.
Everything he said, I was going to say. So great job there. Okay, last one before we wrap up for the day. People have finished marathons in costumes, everything from bananas to a full suit of armor.
Totally true. And interesting to see one of those pass you in the late miles for sure.
Right. Like, how unfair is that? I am gassed. And then I've got a banana coming up behind me. I mean, that's not even fair. Not even fair. But the Guinnesses, did I say that right?
Guinness.
I did that last time on the podcast. The Guinness Book of World Records is super popular at the London Marathon. I guess it's an easier course, and that's just the course to get a record. So I don't know.
Big race, like 50,000 plus people, and it's flat as well. So generally pretty good weather, too.
It's true. All right. Well, it is that time to start wrapping up and where we talk about what's on our training plan for this week.
Yeah, big week for me. I'm running a 10K on the track. I do not think I've raced a 10K since college. So whatever I run, it's going to be an adult PR for me. So
that's exciting.
It's going to be a PR week for sure. And then it's I'm still in heavy training, you know, time here. So I'm going to do 20, maybe even 22 this weekend after the race is on Wednesday. You know, so probably Saturday, do a long run, still get the miles in this week. So that's kind of where I'm at there. How about you?
That's a lot of laps around a track.
Yeah. 25, I think.
That's too many.
But you can, my thought is that doesn't bother me. I can just lock in. And I will appreciate the flatness of the track. I love a track race because it's completely fair. Like, even if it's windy, it's only windy on one side of it. It's a circle. So you're getting both sides of it at that point. So,
you know what? Yeah. You said that you celebrate all the wins, and you're going to get an adult PR Thursday or Wednesday. True. So how are you going
to
celebrate?
I'll probably go to the beach the next day.
Oh, you're already going to do that.
I was already going to do that. But yeah, I'm going to the beach this weekend, and I've been watching what I've been eating pretty closely, as close as one like me can. But I'm sure I'm gonna splurge a ton this weekend, and so that'll be the celebration.
Well, I've got an exciting week. Okay. I am super excited for this week of training. I had a great run on Saturday. I planned to do 7 miles, and I ended up with 8.5 just because the weather was perfect. I felt good. I got a little bit lost, so that definitely counts. How you get lost on a down and back, we won't talk about it.
That's difficult.
We're not going to talk about it. But the good news is that I had a good run. I've got 2 speed workouts this week. I've got a cross training day. So I'm going to be biking for 30 minutes, which I'm super excited about.
Yeah, it'd be good to get off your feet for a little bit.
So, yeah. Yep. Good. But yeah, that's my week. Okay. And with that, our time is up. Don't forget, this podcast is powered by Upward Running, a community built to help you run with purpose, stay motivated, and find your people. As always, this journey is more than miles. God is in every step. The good runs, the tough days, the bad runs, the quiet moments, it all matters to Him. He is with you, He is for you, and He is using this season to grow something deeper inside of you.
At Upward Running, this is where faith and fitness meet, and we'd love to run with you. Join us at upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. That's upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. And if you use the code kindoffast, you get 2 weeks free, like several others have been using lately. We appreciate that. And it lets us know that you heard about us first on the podcast.
Yep. We will be back next Friday with another episode.
And hey, if you like today's episode, you know what? I'm not even going to ask you to like it. I'm not going to ask you to rate it or subscribe or make a comment. None of that. Like, if you do that, that's on you this week. Here is what I'm going to ask you. Tell a friend about it. Tell a friend about Kinda Fast, and then join us again next week.
That was really good. Threw me for a loop there. All right, guys. That's a wrap. We're done.
See ya.
Bye.
All right. So moving right along, let's talk about the news that's out there, or I could try that completely again.
Lala. What am I trying to say here? Let's wrap it up. Got a lot of editing to do this week.
Take 2.
3. This is take 3.
Take 3.
Okay, bye.